Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
When knights of the round table, we dance where we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. When knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rhymes that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot, we sing from the die of Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, the... So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions, just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. Is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. Good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those wooden old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine.
But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn, and nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Into your life it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop.
In constant sorrow all through his days, I am a man of constant sorrow. I've seen trouble all my days. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised, the place where he was born and raised. For 6 long years I've been in trouble, no pleasure here on earth I found.
Help me now. He has no perhaps I'll die upon this train. Perhaps he'll die upon this train. You can bury me in some deep valley for many years where I may lay. Sleeping in my grave,
while he is sleeping in his grave.
Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger, my face you never will see no more. But there is one promise that is given, I'll meet you on God's golden shore.
He'll meet you on God's golden shore.
Yellow moon coming up tonight, shining through the trees. Crickets are singing and lightning bugs are floating on the breeze. Baby, get ready. Across the field where the creek turns back by the old stump road, I'm gonna take you to a special place that nobody knows. Baby, get ready. Ooh, ooh.
You and me go fishing in the dark, lying on our backs and counting the stars where the cool grass grows. Down by the river in the full moonlight, we'll be falling in love in the middle of the night, just moving slow.
Almost over and the summer's come and the days are getting long. I waited all winter for the time to be right just to take you along. Baby, get ready. And it don't matter if we're sick forever and the fish don't bite, we'll jump in a river and cool ourselves from the heat of the night. Baby, get ready.
to Here's the Parable and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. I got a special song that I'm going to play for my friend Muddy, who's over there in the... he's got a storm going on, lightning and wind, so I got a special tune for him. Good morning, Muddy. Here's a good song, storm song for you.
Thank you.
Table.
Hello, everybody. Special shout out to Haggy Shack Radio and TCT Radio and all the folks out there on all the other different networks out there doing the wonderful things that you do. You're listening to Shaziz Radio at www.shazizradio.com, Knights of the Round Table. And if you want to join in on a chat, jump over there to the superchat.html where you have access to not one but three separate chat rooms there. Whew, that's a lot to say all in one breath. So you get to talk to the TCT people at the same time in Super Chat and the Shaziz Radio side and the Wake Radio side. It's a pretty cool deal there. So might even throw up a different chat room up there. Might be a four chat room. Super Chat can grow. That's a good thing. So anyway, you know, fixing the world is the easy part. Getting the world on board with it, the people of the world, that's a little bit trickier. You know, there's a lot of people spent the majority of their lifetime being told how bad things were and how hard it is to fix it. And so, you know, most generally, all hope is lost, it seems. But the thing about it is the world may be a mess. It didn't get that way overnight, and it probably ain't gonna get cleaned up overnight. But I think that if we keep throwing the positive pebbles in the pond that we do, that eventually we'll get the ball rolling. And once you get this ball rolling, it'll start picking up other things, and it's like a snowball rolling down the hill. Eventually everything gets picked up. Anyway, you know, sometimes things will get left gone so far that it gets to the point where it's too overwhelming to even try to clean up anymore. I watched a TV show one time where everybody's house was just like a complete and utter wreck, and they actually had to have somebody come in there to help them organize, to get themselves back on track again. Well, I think that all these networks out here, like Shaziz Radio and TCT Radio and Haggy Shack and all the other affiliated networks out there, I think those are like those crews that are coming out there saying, look, we got solutions to all these problems here. We just got to get together and work them out. Yesterday we were talking about on TCT Radio on the Brain Gym with all the wonderful people over there that we were talking about communities. Building up communities to, you know, show the world that, you know, things can be done. You know, I call it like the zero waste project, where we can actually utilize all kinds of things and still have all the luxuries of life and still be able to work in perfect harmony with nature. Nature is a wonderful teacher. You know, we had Patty on there and Barbara Three Crow and doggone it, who else did we have on there? Can't remember. I can look up the conversation. Either way, it was a we had Brian Porter on there. That's who it was. We had Brian Porter and who else? Doggone it. Might have said everybody. Maybe not. Somebody missing. Anyway, had a lot of wonderful people on there. We had a really, really brilliant conversation. If you get an opportunity to go over there and listen and share that podcast that Patty and them put together, I think you'd like that show. Had a lot of brilliant ideas. And that's what we do here on the Knights of the Round Table. We bring all the brilliant minds from all the way around the world. And, you know, whereas we can't always get together and travel and meet face-to-face or anything like that, we got plenty of research and ideas to share with the world, and we want to throw those positive pebbles out there in pond to invite everyone else to the microphone to come here with their ideas and things that they've learned. And there's communities out there that have already started doing what we're talking about doing on a grand scale. Then we'd like to hear from you. We'd like to hear from all the people who founded these places and who have worked at them and what you've learned and that kind of stuff to share with the rest of the world, you know, what they can do. See, this world, this world is amazing. It's a self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. It's just a beautiful piece of machinery. I don't know exactly the words to say, but it's a wonderful place. The creator of this planet gave us something so amazing, and if utilized properly, we could do so much. You know, if you step back and you just watch the workings of what goes on around you. Nature has provided everything. And it's not as hard a task as you would think in order to be able to utilize what nature has to offer in order to take care of all your brothers and sisters around the world. We have a vast amount of resources and capabilities unlike you can imagine. And each and every one of you being a piece of that puzzle is an important part of that puzzle, because without you, that picture could never be complete. There's no reason in today's world for people to be starving or homeless and cold or whatever. We have the capabilities, we have the technology, we have a vast amount of knowledge, unbelievable amount of knowledge at our fingertips. And so I kind of think we're standing at a crossroads right now, that if we decided to, from this point on, head out there into the world and just fix it. You know, we got the tools, we got the technology, we got the people. You know, it's fixing the world's easy part. It's getting people to believe in themselves enough to want to do it and to be able to do it is the trick. There's a lot of people on this planet. Last I heard, close to 9 billion people on this planet. And 9 billion people, out of all those 9 billion people, every single one of them's got some part of the piece of the puzzle, some gift, some talent that nobody else can do like they can. Nobody in this world can be you. Nobody can do what you can do. Nobody can say the words that are coming out of your mouth the way that you can say them. Sure, people can say something similar, but they're never going to say anything or do anything the way that you're going to do it. Because you are unique. Each and every one of you are unique. Our Creator made us that way. He made us so that we would have to learn one day that we have to work together in order to make things better. You know, you always got your occasional knucklehead that, you're building a little house of cards and doing it for entertainment purposes, and then somebody's always got to come by and sneeze and blow over your house of cards, or tip the first domino that you've been stacking and just knock them all over. There's the ornery nature to mankind, but also there's a deep seated loving nature to mankind too, that whenever it comes to the surface, things can really get accomplished. I believe this with all that I got. No, I don't believe that the inherent nature of man is that we're terrible people and, that we're nothing but evil. I believe we have capabilities of both. I think that's where the free will comes in. Every morning when our Creator blesses us with a beautiful sunrise, we have a clean slate. We don't have to repeat what we did yesterday. We can always move forward and do something wonderful for today to make somebody's life just a little bit easier. And you'd be surprised that when you make somebody else's life easier, they seem to want to make your life easier as well. And so that's the kind of movement that I'm talking about. And the kind of communities that I'm talking about building doesn't have a leader. There's no King Shaziz the Terrible at the top bossing everybody around. There's King Shaziz the Terrible right there at your level helping each other. You know, I'll pick up one end of the board and you pick up the other end of the board, and we'll build that house for that homeless person. That's the way it should work. Because you are your brother's keeper. We're the caretakers of the land and the animals and all that nature has to provide. And we got to use wise choices if we want to live in perfect harmony. It doesn't mean that we have to give up this technology and information that's been beneficial, that has helped to, cure diseases and, learn things and be able to create things that would help to make people walk or have to be able to live in comfort or even be able to breathe better. We don't have to give up that. But we can utilize whatever energies that we borrow from nature to do it in perfect harmony. And we can do this together. You know, like I said, the easy part is fixing the world because we know how to do it. We know how to make this world a better place. There's a lot of people out there in this world that have got caught up in greed, that are trying to build their stairway to heaven in gold. They're trying to find a way to bring about their version of the utopia. I've seen a lot of mini-series where somebody always thinks that the world needs a global reset. Now you got to kill off a bunch of people in order to make the world better. I don't believe that. And I believe that those who do believe that are deluding themselves and only trying to buy themselves time when the ends will never justify the means. It will only cause things to be worse than they were before. You can't steal your way to utopia. It's just not possible. The man's finally sitting there on the top of the entire pile of gold. He's not wealthy. He's not, you know, it says in my book of faith, it's easier for a camel to thread the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to walk through the gates of heaven. I believe that. Because apparently he didn't learn something about life. Life is a whole lot more important than you could imagine. Life is, it's a learning experience. And whenever you finally reach that understanding of what it's all about, that you are your brother's keeper, you are the caretakers of the land and the animals and all the wonderful gifts that we've been given. No matter where you come from, yeah, Barbara says over there in the TCT chat room, she says, it is not material stuff, money. Oh, I must have missed the first one. I think people are confused about what it is that will bring happiness, success, and inner peace. It is not material stuff, money, or elitism. She's right. Hello, Anonymous 7671. Anyway, she's right. You know, when we come in this world, we come in empty pockets. And when we go out of this world, we leave in the same fashion, naked and broke. You can't take it with you. You never could. Finding joy and happiness and inner peace emote is by reaching out to others, sharing, and finding common ground. See, that's one wise lady. Barbara, you should join in on the show. We have these capabilities. It's amazing when you want to talk about power. Power doesn't come the way most people think it does. You know, you got power in love. You got power in the spoken word. You got power in your actions. You got power in just being you. You know, I say that with the voice, that people can literally raise somebody's spirit up to the highest reaches of heaven, and with that same voice can lower them to the lowest, darkest depths of the greatest abyss. We have a lot more power than we think we do. Words have meanings. Words are powerful. Wars have been started over words. You know, ideas and concepts of trying to, you know, bring about some sort of united world. The ends doesn't justify the means if you got to kill to do so. And so these communities that I'm talking about, they're not communities of leaders. They're communities of partners, people that work hand in hand together. That's how you get things done. And there's been many civilizations come and gone throughout the history of time that didn't figure that one out. But there's been a few in this world that have been together for a long time that had figured it out. They figured out that when they work together, they take care of each other. When they learn that when they work in harmony with nature, nature works in harmony with them. You know, am I sound to some out there? It's like a hippie show, you know? Peace and love, can't we all just get along? But in reality, the grand scheme of things, what has all the wars accomplished anybody? Peace never came from the end of the barrel of a gun. It never came from the blade of a sword. Sure, you can scare somebody's life out of them and get them to submit to fear. But there, in my view, is never going to ever be any fear in utopia. The heaven on earth that I keep talking about. It's possible. Everything's possible. If you're willing to strive for it, if you're willing to stand up and do the work necessary, everything's possible. That's why I said, you know, fixing the world's the easy part, because we got a lot of powerful people on this planet. We got people that have enough love in their heart to share with all the 9 billion people that are spread out throughout the entire globe. And as long as they're willing to do that and help each other out, we can make this world a better place. Bible says, I think we have to find that love inside ourselves for all humanity in order to bring peace to the world. And that's the only way you're ever going to bring peace, is with love. You know, you think about all these different wars, and people go out and they hurt each other, and then they, you know, when somebody's family gets hurt, then they want to retaliate. I told a story once or twice, or maybe more than that. There was a reporter that was talking to a couple little Palestinian girls. And she said that, the reporter asked the two little girls, that, do you ever want peace with Israel? And the little girl said, no, we don't want peace with Israel. We hate Israel. They killed our mom and daddy. And I like to tore me up, because I realized that, you know, that's going to be an ongoing cycle. You know, it's going to happen on both sides of the fence. There's a little kids on the other side that feel the same way, and that perpetual chain of events. It's like the Hatfield and McCoys that just never stops. And then finally someday the people look back and they can't even remember what it is that they were even fighting for to begin with. It's a sad thing. But if humanity is ever to reach that ultimate state of enlightenment, if we're ever to get out of this prison that we're in, this box, we got to figure it out. We got to figure out how to communicate with one another across all boundaries. We got to figure out how to work with one another across all borders. And I'm not saying under some one world government, because governments aren't the answer. It's the people that are the answer. It's the people that always come together during tragedies. Whenever there's a big storm and people's homes get torn down, people from all different countries and states, they pull together and they bring resources and blankets and clothing and food to water to help these people out. And the government always shows up at the last minute for the credit. Hey, look what we did. We saved y'all up. No, you didn't. The people did that. The government sent around the folks that had the guns to take away yours. The government took advantage of the situation. So, you know, there was a politician out there, can't even remember what his name was, but he said that a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. Supposed to take advantage of the crisis. You're supposed to brainwash into people to believe in a certain way. And he said that. You know, that's not representation. Well, hello, lady. How are you today? Can you hear me?
Hi.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. I just love what you're talking about this morning.
Well, I believe we can fix it, you know?
I do too.
It might make us crazy in some people's eyes that we do believe that, you know?
Well, you know, we've talked about that we're all crazy anyway, so we've already gotten there, so it doesn't matter.
Well, so we're just adding to our reputation then.
I think that some of us have a very deep hope and faith and belief, you know, in humanity. That's where I'm coming from.
Well, I believe that our Creator put us a choice in our hearts and our minds, and it's up to us to decide where to go with that. You know, some of the people, the argument against the divine power that put us down here is that, you know, if God was so loving, why would He allow man to hurt each other? Why would He allow babies to starve to get to death and stuff? And what they right. don't understand it, in my book of faith, God said don't do that. He said don't kill each other, don't steal from each other, love one another, that kind of stuff, you know. And so no matter which side of the spectrum you fall on your beliefs, it was man that chose to allow people to be harmed, you know. It was, if there's a starving baby in the world, there are 9 billion people on this planet, then out of those 9 billion, there's got to be somebody who understands that how important it is to make sure that that baby's fed and cared for. Am I wrong?
No, I agree, and I think that you know, we know there's such a culture of you know, I guess you'd say just self-absorption or isolation or fear, you know, that and for people to reach out, they really have to have something in their heart, like we said, you know, you have to find that love for humanity. I think that's what's missing, is love for others, love and compassion for all people. And I guess it was once that way, I don't know. And it's, as far as this thing about God, why would God allow this and why would God do that? And I think you're right. I think people forgot the what we call the Creator's law, or, you know, the Creator's law of one, or what I call the original instructions that we were all given, how to live together and on this paradise here, on a beautiful earth. And I think many people have drifted away from that. I know that people are saying there is no God, and you know, and but I think it's about the religious thing. I think people are saying that religion keeps us from God or from Creator, and we are sovereign, you know. And so, but people are looking at this this whole thing about religion or spirituality, and I think there's a lot of confusion about that.
I believe you're right.
Yeah.
I believe that religion is basically the equivalence of government, you know?
Yeah.
they got a terrible track record. But when you get down to the spirituality that you're talking about, you know, we talked about yesterday how I was able to stand not more than 5 feet away from a deer. And the feeling, it was... It's unexplainable that I can stand next to what would have normally been classified as a, you know, a wild creature of the earth that wasn't afraid of me, you know? And it felt good. I just don't know how to explain that to you. But sitting down on my front porch and watching as these raccoons come right up beside me and they're eating some cat food out of the little bowl there, you know, and it was just so neat. It's just a wonderful feeling that when you're that close with nature and nature trusts you back, you see what I'm saying?
I do. It's such a beautiful gift, and I totally understand what you mean when you say, you know, it's hard to explain it, but I've been there, so I know that. But it's unfortunate that a lot of people haven't had that experience. You know, we have snakes here. We have what we call the rat snakes or the black snakes. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yep.
They're beautiful, beautiful creatures, and they are helpful. They're not harmful. They don't bite people. I've picked many of them up, and I had a few guys here, men here, working on something on the house, and there was one of the snakes just laying in the yard all curled up, and he just jumped back and go, oh my God, a snake, oh you, and I said, they won't hurt you. But people don't know. They're afraid of these types of things, you know, and oftentimes I've seen people just destroy a creature, either out of fear or just for, I don't know, I guess, I've seen people deliberately run over turtles, I've seen people deliberately run over snakes, and I just wonder, what is going on in the mind of the, of that person, you know? And I think a lot of it is based on lack of knowledge, certainly, and fear. Fear of nature, you know? So to sit there on your porch and to have that happen, and I have certainly have that experience, but it's about your energy, Shaziz, you know? It's about your heart. It's about the love that you have. You already have that love of nature, and those animals feel that. They know that energy, don't you think?
I believe so. My wife is deathly afraid of snakes, and she gets mad because whenever she sees a snake, she wants me to do the snake in, and I say, I'm going to relocate it, and so I pick the snake up, and I put it on, you know, some other piece of land, and I tell her, look, don't come back, because my wife's not too kind on you.
Exactly. You know, she just, you know, there's a, I don't know if you've ever heard of Fool's Crow, very renowned Lakota medicine man, Fool's Crow.
No.
Well, he was, he's passed away now many years, but he was a medicine man in the Lakota Nation and very revered as an elder and carrying the wisdom and the teachings, you know, of his people. And one of the, of course, the way is do not kill an animal, you know, don't take a life unnecessarily, so, you know, and whenever the Indian people went out to hunt, they started out with a prayer and asking for guidance and asking for, you know, one of the animal, the four-legged people to come to them so that they could feed their own people, you know, the children and the elders. So that's how they started out. And then oftentimes, I would say a greater majority of times, there would be an animal that would come out of, even out of a herd and walk towards that, that hunter, you know. After he took the life with a prayer, he would leave some for, as a gift, you know, of gratitude. And, you know, so he was interviewed, this guy was interviewing him, and he said, well, I understand that your people and you believe that you don't just kill randomly and you don't take a life, you know, just because you're practicing shooting your gun or just for fun. And he said, that's right. And he said, well, what about those pesky things like mosquitoes, for instance? And Fool's Crow said, well, I talked to that mosquito. He says, I give him three chances. I tell him, if you're going to bite me, you better be careful, because I might not like it, and I might just smack you, you know? So he said, if he doesn't listen, I say, okay, you've had your chance, and whack, you know? But he does communicate, you know, it's sort of like, okay, you have to find your balance, but you have to be respectful, you know?
Yep. It's, I understand. It took me a long time in my life to realize what was going on in the world, but once I did, I saw the world in a different way than, I guess, the average Joe, and I just kind of want to share that with people. You know, when I said that my wife, she don't take too kindly to snakes, is because, you know, she really hadn't been taught what Neil was telling about how the black snakes, they'll eat mice and stuff, and they'll, you know, keep down disease because if there ain't mice crawling all over the place, and, you know, it's obvious that people ain't going to get sick like it did, you know?
Yeah.
But she didn't really understand that because that wasn't the way she was raised to believe snakes were bad, you know, that kind of stuff. And so I will what I call relocate. I'll take them over and put them into another field away from the house, and I'm sitting here talking to the snake, and I'm saying, now don't you come back, because, you know, she's right. Going to make me get you.
And, that's true. Well, you know, snakes will eat, these black snakes will eat your baby chicks, and so I've had to relocate a lot of them. You know, when the chicks are just coming along, But they are gentle, you know, and certainly we do have dangerous snakes around here, you know, rattlers and copperheads and so on. But I wouldn't kill one anyway. I mean, it's still, I wouldn't kill one. I would, you know, either bypass it, step aside, get out of its way, and let it go on its way. Or if it need be, you know, relocate it somehow. But there are some people, this reminds me of a story. I live here, you know, in this part of Turtle Island. It's called the Hudson Valley, of course, after Henry Hudson, and, of course, then the Hudson River, which was named after Hudson, but it was the Great Mahicanituck by the First Nations people here. And we have the beautiful mountains here, the Catskills, and they were called the Manitou, Place of Spirit, by the First Nations people. It's very magical and beautiful there, but there are certain areas where there are lots of rattlesnake habitat, you know. And in this one area near Woodstock, I live about 40 minutes an hour from Woodstock, New York, the famous Woodstock, and the little hamlet there of the Hippieville, Hippie Town. But anyway, above the town is called Overlook Mountain. Beautiful mountains. And some developer bought a big piece of part of that mountain, which kind of surprised and troubled everybody, you know. And he started a development up there. Now, you're talking a pretty high mountain, and he had to cut through lots of old growth and push big boulders and rocks to make this, you know, sort of like a snake-shaped road, not a straight-up, you know, straight direct road, like a snaking road up this mountain. And he planted all the, you know, these McMansions up there, and people had to spend a lot of money for the property, and then they had to build certain types of houses. So I'm talking very large, you know, house over, you know, like they call the McMansions, on this beautiful, beautiful, pristine mountain. And so people, yeah, they moved in there. They thought they were in heaven up there, and they go out on their deck, and it was loaded with rattlesnakes, you know.
Oh, man.
And they had to keep calling in, because it's against the law here to kill a rattlesnake. So
I've seen some scary movies like that one.
Huh?
I've seen some scary movies like that one.
So they had to keep calling in these, you know, these people who removed the snakes, you know, because you can't just kill them. But there they were in their paradise, filled with rattlesnakes, and I don't think they were too happy after spending all that money. But it's sort of like, I don't know, you know, it's that unconscious intrusion upon nature, instead of looking at that beautiful pristine mountain and saying, let's just keep it that way. It is so extraordinarily beautiful, and there's lots of creatures that live there.
I was getting ready to say something similar to that. It was nature always seems to get the last laugh on you, so you gotta be, you know.
That's right. And don't you think that's happening big time now, right?
You know,
it's like the Mother Earth is ramping up her revenge.
when we encroach on nature, we got to be respectful. That's a given, because you know, it's like this: you dislocate an army of bees, and you know they ain't got nothing more to do than come back and fight with you.
that's right. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We recently. You know, I had a vision given to me over 15 years ago to find land and buy land to learn how to live, you know, in harmony and with sustainability, and become stewards of the earth, build a community, you know, community of teaching and so on. And we finally, after all those years, purchased 103 acres here down in the valley. I don't know if you're familiar with any of these places, but New Paltz, New York, 100 miles north of New York City in the mountain. And finally, the vision, you know, was fulfilled, and it's really beautiful land. There's a house here that's 1890s, was a farm here, but it hadn't been farmed in 60 years, so that gives us organic land, you know, because I think there's a certain period of time, I think it's about 15 years that your land has to be without spray or pesticides, you know, before it can return to its organic status.
Yeah.
So I realized just we've been here a few years now, and I realized how we are constantly intruding on nature, on life, the creatures' lives, without intention. You know, we're not intending to do harm, but, you know, we have had a dog. She died last week, but she hunted down some of the gophers here and killed a couple of the babies. And that was certainly very heartbreaking for us, you know, but there we are, you know, we have a dog. And this land hasn't, you know, hadn't had a dog here in I don't know how long. So, of course, the creatures are very safe here and feel comfortable. And that was the first thing that we had happen. And we put up this type of fencing to keep out the gophers and the rabbits from the garden. And something else happened where it affected nature and really was heartbreaking, and that was where some of the snakes got caught in this fencing and they couldn't get out. And now we had to take down all the fencing. I mean, we were really heartbroken. That's not what we want to do, you know, and I this really hit me. I was like, how can we function here, you know, and try to be stewards of the earth and live here in harmony and balance with nature? How do we do that? Because every little thing we do. And then I'm thinking, here we are, we're really trying to be conscientious of this. We're really working towards that, and we are affecting nature and causing harm on some level. And then I'm thinking about, well, look about what's going on all over the world. You know, I mean, they just take a whole forest and plow it down and put up a development, you know. What's going on that land that people aren't even aware of? You know, I mean, I've seen a big mall was put up here about a half an hour away from us years ago, and up on the most pristine, beautiful little mountain with the best view, and they started clearing away that whole area of forest and meadows, and there was a wetland there. And, oh my gosh, it's like hundreds and hundreds of turtles were running out of that wetland all across the parking lot because the dump trucks were dumping debris and stuff in the wetland, and people were picking up the turtles and trying to save them, and all this is going on, you know. And it's like, what do we do, you know? I mean, it's really, really difficult and sad, you know, because, yeah, humans are doing their thing, and we are constantly interfering with nature.
Well, I've seen an amazing change in the land that I'm on. I'm only on 12 acres, but it's still really nice. When I first got here, people prior to me had literally used this place for a dumping ground. I mean, I've been cleaning this land up since way back in 98, and I'm still cleaning it up. And I was going through the land, and I was cutting back, you know, grapevines that weren't natural to this area. I was cutting back those, and you know, you get poison ivy vines and stuff like that that will crawl all the way up a tree and they'll literally choke the life out of a tree.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so, as I kept picking away at this thing over the years, it's been, you know, since 98 that I've been working this land and picking up trash and, you know, cleaning out the creeks and stuff like that. It was almost as if some point that land started helping me. You know,
yeah.
I started seeing beautiful trees pop up, and
yeah.
the land when I got here, it looked sick. You know, it was overgrown, it was trashed, there was junk laying all over the place, and the more that I worked this land, you know, more like as a partner as opposed to, you know, anything else, you know. And I took care of the land, and the land started taking care of me. We started seeing wild raspberries growing and blackberries, and
right.
And we got hickory nuts and walnuts, and I could just go on. We got, you know, it's just when you treat the land good, it reciprocates.
Where do you live?
I live in the heartland. I live in Missouri.
Oh, you live in Missouri. Your land sounds like our land. We bought 103 acres here, and like I said, yeah, the same thing happened. But, you know, in the old days before they had trash pickup or dumps, you know, where people would just take their trash, they used the land. They just threw everything. So for, you know, 100 years or more, or whatever, they had people just dump their garbage here. So we're dealing with the same thing, And so we had the same experience. When we came here, I mean, I knew this was the land that we were meant to be on. It, you know, it was basically everything that I was told we needed. You know, we needed forest, we needed open areas, we needed water. We have a big lake and a big pond, you know, and everything here was really the sign was this is the place and
so
the location.
Do you feel like you've literally turned your land into a sanctuary?
Yes. Well, this, yes, exactly.
Well, that,
yeah.
When you was mentioning earlier about how you guys were taking out fences and stuff like that, the farmers, they left a whole bunch of fence rows for, you know, when I guess they must have had cattle at some time or whatever. And the barbed wire was just like embedded in trees, and it took me a long time to pull up old fence posts and fence wires. And now we've got deer that run through here and wild turkey and just,
yeah.
It's like, one of my friends was saying, I can't believe how many birds you got around here.
Yeah, oh my gosh, we have so many birds, so extraordinary birds. Yeah, I mean, we have beaver here, we have muskrats, we have lynx, we have wolves, we have coyotes, we have herons, we have... I mean, it's like a wonderland here. It is so amazingly beautiful. But I have also felt the difference, like you say, as soon as we came here and we started, you know, I started to feel the shift of the energy, you know, like a lightning, like a joyous response, you know, from the earth, from the land here. And, you know, that this is a beautiful thing when you recognize that, when you're aware of that, you know, and we're trying to be very conscientious about how we garden. You know, we're not plowing up. We're not plowing up the earth, you know, with a machine.
Yeah,
we're working with...
You, huh? Let me ask you one more question. When you very first got started and you looked at your land and the shape that it was in, did you have like a feeling of overwhelm, like you're biting off more than you could chew?
I've felt that way in my whole life.
Well, that's
I don't know. It's like when I first came here, I said, I just want to go home.
That's
why am I here?
Yeah, that's the way that I felt because of the state of affairs that it was in. It was like, you know, I don't know if I can do this. I'm only one guy. But
well, we've had that definitely, Shaziz, because we have a lot. Of course, we have a big vision, you know. We have a very large garden now, but the way we set up the garden was just we laid the whole land with cardboard, and then we just started to mulch and mulch and mulch and take composting. And it took us a little over a year, and now we're seeing the results. But we couldn't, you know, we're trying to work a little bit with the permaculture, listening to the land and watching the way the water flows when it rains and watching the you know, the direction of the sun. And we're trying to really be more attentive and connected and conscientious of this part of the earth here for the better, you know, the betterment of the growing and of the land itself. And it's huge because we have, you know, we're waiting on baby goats now. We have four goats and we have chickens and yeah, we have our garden, but we want to put up a greenhouse, you know, and we have solar that we haven't set up yet. So we have all this, you know, we have composting toilets. We're not using the regular, you know, septic stuff and all that. And but we have a lot on our plate. And yeah, we feel overwhelmed at times. Absolutely. Yeah.
But then... And then you'll find these moments, like when I go out and sit by the new pond that we put in, and I watch. I actually put the very first fish that I put in the pond was like a couple dozen minnows and some goldfish, just to keep the mosquitoes down and you know, give the pond a chance to set in. After all that hard work, I was sitting in a lawn chair out by that pond, and I saw two goldfish. And I got this weird thing about my day is that if I see goldfish at the beginning of the day, I think like goldfish are like good luck, you know. And I usually end up having a good day. But all that work that I put in towards you know, cleaning this land up, it was all paid for in that one little instance when I saw those two goldfish. The joy that went over my heart to see that those goldfish made it through all the winters, and you know, and they were there. They were happy. It was, I don't know. I know I sound kind of. It's just.
What? No, you. I get it. Please, I do get it. I mean, it's like we have the pond and the lake were here, and we have tons of fish in both places, and all kinds of ducks and geese come, and herons and everything else, and we have snappers, big snapping turtles in the pond below the house. Now, for however long, who knows, because those snapping turtles come out of that pond up the hill and lay their eggs here right around the house. Now, they've been doing this probably from the beginning of their time, and they have their memory the way turtles do. You know, this is where I was born, and this is where a tiny little, maybe a couple of inches around, these little snapper turtles, you know, and they can be huge. We have big snapping turtles here, and I've had to take some of those snappers out of the garden because they get caught. There you go again. They come into the garden, and they couldn't find their way out because of the fencing, right? So I'd have to, if ever you come up on a snapping turtle, here's what you do. You get a towel. You put your garden gloves on. You get a towel. You throw that towel over the head of the snapper. Now, that snapper will immediately grab on with its jaws onto that towel. So, you know, you're fine. Then you pick it up. Its legs and claws will start moving. So that's why you have your gloves. And you just take that turtle where it needs to go. You know, so I've done a couple of those big snappers. And, boy, I'll tell you, it's quite a rush.
I believe it.
Yeah.
How you doing, Barry?
Yeah, get your finger.
No.
Boy, they'll take your finger right off.
Yes, they will. That's why you need a towel.
Oh, yeah. My dad, I remember we used to deal with them in Northern Ontario when I was a kid. And I remember my dad, there was one in the boat one day, and my dad took the paddle to get him out of the boat, and that snapping turtle grabbed that paddle, and he broke it right now. They got incredible power in their jaws and their feet, man. They'll tear you to pieces with their claws. They're mean, mean animals. But they're part of the environment, and they're part of the chain,
they
do their
purpose.
Job. Yeah, yes, like they do. Mosquitoes. Just don't come near them. Give them lots of
purpose,
space.
Just like slugs. I don't know. There's a couple of things here that I'm just saying, okay, Creator, I know everything has a purpose.
What were you thinking?
I know everything has its purpose. Okay, what's the purpose of a slug, you know? I mean, well, it's got to feed somebody. I don't know.
Well, Barry, I put a phrase in there in the chat room before the show started. I said, fixing the world's the easy part, you know, because we got all the technology and the tools. It's amazing what we have access to in this day and age. Now, the hard part comes about trying to get people in this world to believe that it's even possible to fix the world. You know, I've been talking about the dream forever and a day, you know, and it sounds like an overwhelming task. It sounds like something that is an impossibility when you look at the grand scheme of things. How do you stop wars? How do you stop violence and starvation and all that kind of stuff? Well, I'm listening to Patty tell me about what she's done to her land, and I'm thinking about what I've done to my land. And
Barbara.
When I'm listening to Barbara talk about what she's done to her land, and I'm thinking about what I have been doing to mine. I'm sure that you probably had times whenever you brought friends over and they looked at all the work that you've done in amazement. You know, you guys have done such a wonderful job around here. And that showing people what can be done, you know, that I think is the gift that you get from all the hard labor that you've done to that land, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, I think people have they want to do this. They'll come here and they'll be amazed, right? just like people that come to you probably. And I think people feel that it's impossible for them, or that it's, you know, first of all, it's impossible for me to get land. I hear that a lot from people, you know, and it is difficult, but there are ways certainly that it can be done. Now, we're looking into, for instance, because we have goats, and goats help the land, you know, there's certain government-sponsored programs that you can get funding for, right? So it's an agricultural tax deduction if you have certain things, and the goats are one of them. If you have a tree farm, for instance, the only thing with a tree farm is sometimes people use pesticides if they're going to sell those trees. But if you grow trees that are indigenous to your area that may have been not as abundant because of logging or whatever's going on with those trees, you can get certain tax refunds from the government. You have to look at these things, you know, so you can get assistance. But I think people have a desire, more so certainly now than ever, because I think people are just getting fed up with the system, with their lifestyle, you know, and they do want that peace. They do want that freedom. They do want to be back in nature, because that's our fundamental nature. But they're kind of like stuck with, I don't know how to do this, you know. I mean, I had this vision given to me so many years ago, and it's interesting because I would talk to people about this vision and about community. I said, you know, we all need to have more fun. We need to help each other. We need to learn to be, again, stewards of this earth. The earth will, you know, feed us. We need to, you know, the message is that we need our clean water. We need, you know, land. We need the earth. We need each other. And people would go, oh, yeah. Oh, I love that idea. Yeah, count me in. And then the next sentence they would say, and everybody across the board said this, but I need my own space, they'd say. And I said, well, yeah, of course, we all like our own space, you know. And I think, well, where is that coming from? And then I said, well, our plan is to have little individual cottages and a community kitchen, you know, where we all cook together, and you can also have your own space, you know. But it was interesting because, I came to think, you know, what is that? See, where I am now, or where you are now, where people are, the way people live now, if I don't like what you say, I can delete you. I can hang up the phone. I can never speak to you again on Facebook because I just don't like your perspective, or we had a little disagreement. You can't do that when you're living in community. You have to learn how to be in relationship with each other. You have to meet each other on common ground and say, okay, this is what happened. Can I share with you my feeling when you did this or said that? I'd like you to hear me out. And the other person, of course, will have their own say. And then community and relationship and unity is about coming to a common ground and recognizing our differences, but moving through that with compassion and caring and love for each other. That's difficult because we're so used to just disconnecting or deleting people. So that's what I realized, that people were in fear that they have to have their own space to run away. You know, if something happens, they got to shut the door. You know, you really can't do that in community, you know? So that's what I've been observing.
Let me tell you an interesting story. I got no trespassing signs set up at my front gate up there. And those no trespassing signs, I put there for the government. I got a friend come by one time. He said, well, I saw these no trespassing signs, and I thought you were starting to become kind of antisocial. And I told him, I said, brother, those aren't for my friends. Those are from the government and for those folks that just can't get along. You know, I need to have that gate up there to say, you know, if you're coming through here, you know, with some peace in your heart, then this is the sanctuary where you're welcome. And if you're coming here to, you know, cause my family or me harm, then it's a different story. And that's the only way that I can separate the outside world from the inside of the 12 acres of land that I'm on. And when people come out here, they're not asked anything. Nobody's pressured to change their lives or anything like that. They have the opportunity to see what it is that I see and be comfortable. And they leave here wanting to come back. You know, it's really peaceful here.
Well, I think that what I was going to say was people have a hunger for this, and you and us, I mean, we have a plan certainly to have make this a sanctuary for teachings, for people to come and share the garden and be involved in the garden and be involved with the goats and just come here to be quiet or, you know, yeah, just...
You also said about, you know, building little cabins and stuff like that. It's ironic because that's the same idea that I've got, that I want to build. I want to make this place look like a campground, and that way that when people come out, you know, if they want to spend the night out there in a campground and you know, enjoy nature and stuff, and I'm cutting trails through here to, you know, give them a place to go check out things, and it's just a...
So you're in service. You're going to be in service. I feel my purpose here is to be in service. Mostly, first to be in service to the Creator and to Mother Earth, and then, you know, of course, to help people to find their own connectedness to that. You know, to that nature, but also to the Source. You know, and people do have a hunger for that. Now, they don't have to come and live here, but we want to open it up so people can come and participate in various, you know, events or teachings, you know, herbal walks and ceremony, because we have our ceremonial place here, too. And we just repaired this old cinder block building down through the woods here, and that's the first sanctuary that we put up. You know, it's for where people can just come and meditate or sit quietly or have a ceremony or, you know, whatever. But it's just a beautiful little, it was a funky cinder block building, and now it's a beautiful little sanctuary. And it's so uplifting, you know, when you can do this. So that's the kind of thing. But you're in service for the Mother Earth and Creator and me too. And I feel like this is one of the purposes of us, of all of us who are here on these talk shows, and, you know, like Brian and Barry, and, you know, we're here for that reason, you know.
Yeah, I tell everybody that comes over, I says, you know, this land's in my name, but I don't really own this land. I can't put this land in my pocket and take it with me. But, you know, what I can do is I can clean it up and inspire others to share it with me, and you know, enjoy nature and leave it as an example. You know, when I'm gone, and people see what's been done here, and it's not just by me. I've got friends that will come over and they'll do things around the property, make it look good because they like to come out here and enjoy the same thing. But what you're doing and what I'm doing and what other people are doing, bringing this. It's like we're polishing our little section of the earth and showing people what could be accomplished. That's why I said, you know, fixing this world's the easy part. It's showing people that this can be done, and even those that can't afford to own land still are welcome to come out here and enjoy this one when they need some peace and quiet, and, you know, to get down to nature and just enjoy life.
So don't you think that people are really, I mean, I feel this, that there's a spiritual illness, physical as well, and mind, but specifically a spiritual illness, because people aren't connected to the land, because they're living in cement, or because they're just pressured to survive, you know, and they certainly, you know, ignore the earth around them or nature around them because they're so overwhelmed and stressed, and I think there's this illness of body, mind, and spirit, and I know that being on the land can heal that.
How many times have you had somebody be out there to spend some time with you who said they feel so much better out there?
Oh my God, we've had a few people working here doing some things to the house, and this one guy comes along, he says, I love working here. He said, there's something about when I'm here on this land that I feel that I don't feel anywhere else. He said, and I just love coming here.
Yep, I've had the same thing. So I think you and me might be very well on the same mission, and I'm sure there's others out there doing the same thing. And hopefully these stories could be inspiration for people to, you know, even if you can't afford to buy land. There's a lot of land out there, even the land that they call government land, which there is no such thing as government land in reality, but nonetheless, you go out camping, you don't have to throw your trash in the creeks and leave mess behind. You work in harmony with nature, and you'll find out next time you come back, it's more than likely going to be the same way, because, you know, people, when they see a clean area, deep down in their heart, they know that area should stay clean. Am I wrong?
No, I agree, but I've also seen people go out in nature and leave trash. I've seen people on the river, the beautiful river here, with their jet boats, loud boats with music blaring, and I'm thinking, why are they even here on the river? Why are they in the forest? What draws them to the forest than to leave their trash? I feel like there's education missing here about the relationship to nature and what it can really do for you, and how we are the stewards of this earth. We are the caretakers, and that was our original job, you know. And I think there's needing an education, and I guess we have to start with our young children, our young people, you know. That I think would be important, you know. And we plan on doing that here too. There are communities here in this area where they have places where children can go and learn about nature, learn how to be, learn how to build a fire, learn how to listen, learn how to walk quietly so that you don't, you know, chase off what you'd really enjoy hearing or seeing, you know. This needs to be education like this.
That's what I want this piece of land to do. I want the people to be able, my surrounding community... I told you I was planting fruit trees all over the place, and I'd like to be able to tell those folks that up there in the town that, you know, bring a basket down here and go around and pick yourself some fruit off these trees when they're ready, you know. Right. And just give them a little vision of what I see that this place is about, you know, and maybe they'll do that on theirs. You know, maybe they'll start helping their neighbors out. You know, I live in a farming community that's wonderful, because it seems like the farmers know when other farmers are in trouble, and they will come together and they'll help each other out. This town that I live in, ironically, is called Kingsville. We're on the Knights of the Round Table, but I live in Kingsville.
That's interesting.
And so, you know, it's like, it's just amazing. It's like a family. It's not like your average average areas where, you know, people could live 10 years next to their neighbor and not know who they are, you know, or anything about them. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I just want to say that Brian put up, there's this website. He talked about it yesterday too. www.woof.com. So I guess it's a, you know, how to sustain or be in a sustainable community and so on, you know. So I just wanted to mention that. And he also says nature is a mess. Gotta love it. But nature is not a mess. I'm sorry to disagree with you. We've sort of made the mess upon nature, but, you know, there are people who are helping that situation. And, you know, I also want to mention, in communities, especially inner cities, there's lots of people who are taking parking lots that are filled with trash and junk, and they're turning them into community gardens, you know?
You know, that's cool.
It's amazing. You have to get in touch with the people in the community, so that's the first step, right?
I told a story, I don't want to hurry up so Barry can have a chance to talk. He said he got to leave at the top of the hour, but I told a story one time about, I saw this dump, and in the middle of this dump was the most beautiful flower that I ever seen.
Mm.
And I was inspired, you know, looking at that dump. I mean, I didn't clean it out or anything, but I was inspired by that, because no matter what mankind does, nature will always peek out with a little bit of beauty and show you what could be if you really wanted it. And that's why I say, whenever I work this land out here, this land seemed to smile back, and I can walk up there, walk around this land, and if a deer comes by, the deer don't run off in the other direction. They're not afraid of me. And if you never experienced that in your lifetime, it's something you really should experience if you have the opportunity. It's a wonderful thing. So
yeah, you know, I have a story because I'm the one that has to leave at the top of the hour, actually. I have a conference. But I just wanted to share this because you reminded me of something, an experience I had years ago. I was on my way to Washington, D.C., for this big indigenous gathering there on the mall, and I didn't have a way to get there, and somebody, through somebody else, contacted me and said they were driving. So this young fella and this young woman picked me up in her car, and we got on the throughway. As soon as we got on the throughway, the car started, like, going, you know, glug, 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 you know, like, jerking, like it was going to stop, and I got like, what's going on? And she says, oh, no, don't worry. It does that every once in a while, but it will be fine, right? So I don't know if you're familiar with New Jersey, but the big industrial areas of New Jersey, it's pretty amazing, overwhelming with factories and highways and all kinds of stuff. I've never been there myself, but we're on the highway on our way to Washington, and we're in the heavy, heavy area of traffic and highways crossing, crisscrossing, factories all over. And the car starts again clugging and chugging, and we realize we have to get off. So we get off and we pull onto this four-lane ramp, the off-ramp that's going up a hill, and all around us is traffic and trucks and people speeding and factories and everything around us. It was unbelievable for me because I've never been in anything like that. And we see a gas station on the other side of the down, the highway going down. So the car just dies right there in the middle of this traffic. So two of us get out, the driver's still in the car, and we're trying to push the car up a hill to get to a cross point. Some guys come in a truck, and they stop, and they push us with the truck. We get in. We go down the other side and pull into the garage, into the parking lot. And there's all kinds of noise and traffic and smells, and I'm just sitting in the car, and I'm waiting to see what's going to happen. So the guys, you know, said they got to give us a little bit of time because we just pulled in and they're busy. I'm sitting in the car, and there's all cement and, you know, tar on the ground, everything, you know how it is. And I see at one little tiny crack in the parking lot this little dandelion coming up. Just one little tiny dandelion. And I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is, what's underneath all this tar and this cement and these buildings, you know, is the mother. She can't breathe, you know, and I'm talking to myself like this and I'm feeling kind of like sad and I'm thinking this is just one small part on you know, this is happening here on the whole of the earth. But here's this one little dandelion lifting its head up, trying to get through, you know, to connect to the air, the light, the sunlight, the rain, to bring its all that down to the roots and into the mother. You know, so we had a very strange thing happen. They said, we can't fix the car. We have to keep it overnight, and you can come back and get it. Now, we're on our way to Washington, so they said, well, we'll drive you to a car rental, which was very nice of them. They took us to the car rental, and they got a car for us, and we get our suitcases in there, and we're about to take off, and the guy runs out, and he said, wait a minute, we can't rent you a car, because you're coming back Sunday to drop the car off. Nobody's here, so we can't do it. We'll drive you to the New Jersey airport, where you can rent a car there, which was very nice of them. Okay, so it's interesting, because that car was a white car. So they take us to the airport. There's tons of people waiting there to rent cars, and I'm sitting and waiting. We finally get the car rental. We go to the parking lot. We get in the car. Everything, all the suitcases, we're all set. We go to the gate. And the guy looks at the number on the windshield and looks at his little, the board he's carrying, the paper he's carrying, and he says, that's not your car. You can't take this car. The guy gave you the wrong car. So we go back to the parking lot and get the attendant there, and he says, oh yeah, I'm so sorry. Here's the car that was yours. Another white car. Okay, so we've got three white cars. We get in that car, and I'm getting a funny feeling by now. Something's going on here. We get in that car, and the young fella tries to start the car, and it won't start. It just will not start. So now I'm sitting there in the back seat, and I'm saying, okay, what's going on? The message I got was, we need to pray. We need to get out of that car and pray for that Mother Earth underneath all of this stuff, you know? All the covering, what's covering her up, the cement, the tar, the buildings, the traffic. So I said to them, okay, in order to get out of here and on our way, we need to pray. So now, I don't know if you know anything about smudge, but sage, which we always carry with us, so we had a little smudge bowl. We get out in the parking lot, the three of us. I light the sage. The smoke is pouring out of this little smudge bowl. People are going by in cars and looking at us, a big busload of people. Everybody's at the window looking at us, and we're standing there holding hands praying. So it must have been quite a scene. And so once we prayed, everything shifted, and we got in the car, and a different car, actually. All cars were all white. And then we were on our way. We got to Washington. We got to this big event with all the teepees were up and beautiful, and lots of ceremony and prayers. And we met somebody who said, well, they traveled through New Jersey, and they got stuck on the roadside and kept trying to get their car started and got a message, you need to pray. So pray for New Jersey. So they did, and their car started up fine. So that's my story.
That's cool.
Very, very steep. It was really kind of neat, actually.
That is really cool. I tell you, you know, people overlook the simple. And that's probably why so many people's lives are miserable. You know, I don't miss the details of life anymore. I used to. I mean, I was running around and having a good old time, you know, just haphazardly running through life, and I missed some of the most beautiful things. And until, you know, I had some sort of I don't know what you'd call it, awakening or you know, spiritual connection, I missed out on some of the most beautiful things that I'm talking about today. And I'm wanting, if people could just experience that just once, they would see something different in this world. They would see a reason to want to bring nature back, you know, to help nature. You know, our Earth is amazing. It is a, you know, self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. It has provided abundance for everybody. And, you know, if nature's allowed to do what nature does, we live in a wonderful world. But the more that we trample it down and ignore, you know, what it could be, it's kind of like this. I had a vision one time where I actually saw God. I was standing in the presence of God. And there's no human words that could explain that type of love. I mean, it was just, you could put the best writers in the world and they couldn't bring together the words to explain that kind of love. And the further that I got away from God in this vision or this dream, the sicker the world became. And I feel like that's the same thing with nature. The further you get away from nature, the sicker the world becomes. Yeah. And when it was... my dream went from extreme. It went from me standing next to God to literally finding out what the true meaning of hell would be. And it's not like what you would see in a scary movie, or, you know, even some biblical reference aren't the same as what I experienced. It was so much worse. I mean, for me, standing in an eternal lake of fire burning for eternity and being tortured by demons would be so much better than what I experienced, the true meaning of hell. And essentially where I ended up was, I was in a place of darkness it was the total opposite of light. It was the total opposite of God. It was a way. It was nothing. There wasn't nobody there for me to cry with. Nobody there for me to console or be consoled by or suffer alongside. It was just me and my own thoughts and my own worst nightmares of just me. And
well, I think that hell on earth is what we create, and our mind is good at that.
Yeah. But
well, we're pretty close to it right now.
I think the lesson that I learned was that the further you get away from what is right, which is, you know, being the caretakers and the servants to one another, the worse this world becomes. And when I realized that, I woke up with a different perspective on life. I woke up and I was thankful for everything. You know, I'd see bumblebees and I would watch them and I'd be amazed at. I'd be thinking in my mind mechanically, how is this even possible? And it was just everything to me from that point on. It just seemed to be. I'm like a child learning things for the new time that I should have known all along, but my mind and my eyes were just blinded by all the chaos in the world. And I just wanted people to at some time, I wish that everyone on this planet could have the same exact dream or experience that I had, because it is a life-changing experience. You know, whatever side of the fence you fall on as far as spirituality or your belief systems or whatever, if you ever experience that, you'll experience yourself in a way that you've never possibly imagined, that there is so much more going on in this world than you can possibly imagine. And if you can get even remotely close to that kind of love again, it's worth the journey. And the things that you see, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say, because I do have to leave in a few minutes, and before I go, I want to say that I've experienced that love, and I've always said we don't have a language to describe that love, that divine love or creator's love, whatever that, you know, we don't have words, we don't have language. So people, if they haven't experienced that, they don't really get what we're talking about. But, you know, to me, you became humble.
Yep.
You know, it's humbling, not arrogance. It's to become humble is to really see and to really feel and to open your heart, because we kind of, like, humanity is pretty arrogant, you know. We know everything. We can fix everything. We can make everything better, bigger, faster, whatever it is. We have the, you know, we can solve all the problems. That's not really being humble in relationship to the beauty that is all around us and what we can receive. You can receive everything that you need from the mother, from Mother Earth, from nature, from your creator, from connectedness to that. That will solve all of your problems, I feel. That's my belief. So
Patty
I just said, wanted to say that.
Patty said in the chat room, "His life is magical." And yes. Stephen Gibbons said, "Billy's seeing the connection in the small stuff." Oh, I missed a comment there somewhere.
Anyway, well, I want to thank you for allowing me to be on here today. I loved what you were talking about, and you really were, you know, had some good things to say, and I just wanted to pop in, so I appreciate it so
Barbara,
much.
Barbara, I'm always humbled and glad for your presence. I mean, anytime you want to show up on the show, you're more than welcome. Your family here. That's all I got to say.
And thank you so much. I feel that, too. So we're all family here. It's nice to see everybody in the chat that's our family, too, and all the listeners. I appreciate it so much. So,
yep.
All right, you guys have a beautiful day, and love you all.
You, too. So how you doing, Barry? We were on a roll, brother. We couldn't stop.
Well, I know it's hard to get a word in edgewise when I get in here with you guys, man. I've experienced that many times, but it's all good. And I know you got lots to say. You know, really, boy, we got ourselves in a pickle. As far as I'm concerned, the human race is about to pay a huge price for its complacency, its ignorance, and its inability to see what we're doing to our environment and to our planet. And you know what? We as individuals can do things to become self-sufficient and start small communities, but unfortunately, a majority of the world's population live in big cities, and they haven't got the opportunities that you have, Shaziz, or I have up here, to do the things that we need to do to be self-sufficient. They're entwined into the big city life. They are programmed running around at a million miles an hour going nowhere. And unfortunately, when people kind of get into that paradigm, I see it with people that live in big cities. I have a sister that lives in Toronto. She just, I mean, that's their life. They just love the big cities. They have no idea what it's like to go out and really enjoy nature and experience what the world has to offer, what the nature has to offer. But, you know, unfortunately right now, we're destroying nature at an unprecedented rate. We have never, ever, and I'm just looking, I'm not a doomsdayer, I'm not a fear-mongering type of guy, but I'm very realistic about what I see and what I understand is happening to my planet. And right now, the acceleration in die-offs of animals is absolutely spiraling out of control. I've watched the increase in the last 7 years of mass die-off events, what they call mass die-off events, and right now we're seeing a spiral upwards that's just accelerating, and yet people still are complacent to it. The most important thing we could be doing right now is waking people up to the fact that if we don't, as a human race, whether you're in a city or wherever you live, we don't stand up to what's going on to this planet right now, there isn't going to be life on this planet in 15 or 20 or 25 years from now. Well, and I honestly believe that. I honestly 100% believe that, because you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out if we see the die-off events spiraling right now, and we have this thing called the food chain, and the planet is dying in places. I've read reports on the dolphins and the whales just in the last 3 to 4 weeks that are washing up, and the millions of fish that are washing up. The reports are not being fabricated. This isn't a manipulated report. These are being reported through mainstream media outlets all over the planet right now, and yet we still go to work and go, hey, let's go home and watch the hockey games. Society is so narcissistic. We have become such a narcissistic society, self-empowered, self-fit, self-fat. 17,000 increase in the search engine selfie on the internet in the last year. 17,000% increase. And they've now added selfie to the dictionary as a word. I mean, come on, guys. We have become so into ourselves, so narcissistic as a society. And that is exactly what our society has become. That unless society has a change of heart, the planet will die, because society will continue to go the way it is. And I'm talking about majority of them. There's lots of us out here, like you and me, that cry every day when we see what's happening to our planet. We cry every day when we see what's happening to our children and how they're being poisoned, and how vaccines and how GMOs are absolutely decimating our society, and how our diseases are going right through the roof. What does it take for people to wake up, Shaziz? What does it take? A change in heart. But the world is under attack by evil in ways we've never, ever experienced in this particular time of human history. Ever. We see evil just perpetrating itself in every phase of our society. Stuff that makes me want to puke is now being passed as laws and acceptable by our governments. Well, what is it going to take, Shaziz, to people to wake up?
Barry,
will they wake up, Shaziz?
I believe they will. You, Patty, or you, Barbara, and myself are here just on this panel today, this show today on Knights of the Round Table. You know the story of a lighthouse? There were sailors that, so many sailors had died, you know, in stormy seas, and because they got too close to the reefs and the rocks, that somebody came up with
this. Of course, they built lighthouses.
Yeah, they built this lighthouse out there. And I kind of feel like each one of us are a lighthouse in this day and age, because there's people out there that are going through all these terrible things that you talked about, and you're right. The world is sick and it needs our help. And I believe that if we decide, if we can come together, we can fix it. You know, all hope isn't lost until it's all over. But if, as long as you're being that lighthouse, you surround yourself with a lot of friends out there that you guys are not just sitting idly by and not doing nothing. You're being proactive in your communities, and you're talking to people, and you're making people aware of things that need to be resolved. And so you, for them, are that lighthouse on that stormy sea. If it wasn't for you being there, they might not even have a clue that they were even remotely in danger. And so how we fix this, Barry, is that we got to be that lighthouse. You know, with these radio shows or our talks that we get out there, we meet with people and we show them things, and we get interactive with our communities and, you know, our countries and our governments or whatever, and we show them a better way. We have that capability, and the power in the spoken word is beyond all imagination. If you really think about what you can accomplish with the words that you either write down on paper or that come up out of your mouth, you're a lighthouse, Barry. You're a lighthouse to me and everyone else out there, because there's been many a times when I was so frustrated because the world, you know, you're right, we have cried many tears on these shows, and we've laughed and we've had fun together, and, you know, it's been ups and downs. But on times when I was in my stormy seas, and my friend Barry come over and he give me an idea that, you know, hey, we can do this thing, you know. And it's the same way with Patty and Barbara and Muddy and Thomas and Raymond and all the other people out here, and Jermaine, Stephen in the chat room, and all the folks that we've been in contact with. We haven't given up. We haven't stopped shining that light to show people possibilities and answers to, you know, solutions to problems out there. Even the worst problems out there, if we assist nature and let nature do what nature does best, then, you know, we can help speed that process up of healing our planet. And you're correct in the fact that time is running out. We gotta get our act together, and there's an urgency to the matter. We can't just stand idly by and allow the status quo and the governments of the world to run amok as they've been doing, because, you know, when these beautiful things, these wildlife are gone, or the waters are all tainted, then we, you know, we're next. It's as simple as that. We're not trying to scare the world. We're trying to be that light that the world can see from the ocean. You know, the stormiest weather's out there, that there is a better way. You know, when they see that light shine, that light that is you, I don't think that none of us are here for no reason. I think there's a purpose for everything under the sun. I believe that there's a purpose for you and me and all the folks we've talked about and all the networks that are involved in what we do. There is an answer, and we can fix this world. The hard part, the hardest part of this whole deal, is to make people believe that it can be done, because the task is so overwhelming. When you see these disasters,
we better get on it quick,
then. Yeah, it needs to be a daily thing, Barry.
Well, you know, it to me, it remains to be seen whether the human race can unite. But, you know, I honestly believe for most people to realize and actually get involved themselves to a point where they actually want to do something about this, I believe it's going to have to get to a point where it impacts their lives directly. And I believe that time is coming very, very, very quickly, where all of a sudden the human race will become aware that there is major problems that need to be identified. And maybe we can get people on board. But right now, I see the human race is spiraling downwards. And I got to call a spade a spade. That's what I see. Like I said, we have become so divided, so confused, so mixed up as a society by all these different factors that are affecting the way we think, the way we see each other, the way we communicate with each other, the way our brains are being scrambled, the way our health is being affected. This is all part of being able to connect with each other, and that part of our body and our minds is being taken away from us. And whether we can get together, you know, Shaziz, that remains to be seen. I guess that's the million-dollar question. All I can do at this point in my life is tell people about my experience with Jesus Christ and what God has done in my life. And that peace that I get in my soul, I know if everything goes south tomorrow, that it doesn't matter, that this is just a passing time. And all I can do right now is try and let people know that that love that I talk about is genuine, that it doesn't come from me, it comes from a much higher source in my life. And to me, I can't do anything about everything I see going on in this world. This world is falling into a complete state of chaos. It doesn't matter what you talk about or what kind of faction we talk about in society today. The world is falling into a complete and utter state of chaos, and it's accelerating. Well, we see people's minds coming apart, literally coming apart right now. We're seeing stuff that we've never seen before. And these events are accelerating right now.
All I can say is,
hey, get ready for it in your soul, because nothing else is going to matter.
In my book of faith, my Lord said that the faith of a mustard seed could move a mountain, and that's what we're trying to do right here. I'm trying to take the faith of a mustard seed. Actually, in my case, I got the faith of a mountain, and I'm trying to move mustard seeds. But the thing is that until this whole thing finally collapses, and even when it does collapse, I'm going to still keep on shining the same light that I'm shining now, even in the worst possible scenario, because I have to be, there's people going to need places to go. They're going to need places like my land to go for sanctuary when things get terrible out there in the rest of the world, you know. And maybe at some point the terrible will come here, and I pray that it doesn't. But if it does, I'm going to be the best that I can be under the circumstances that I have to contend with, because I have somehow or another, I've seen the light, I've seen the truth, and I know that things are pretty rough. And I believe when my Lord said, the faith of a mustard seed can move a mountain. He said, you tell that mountain to move and it'll move. And my son and I, when my son was about, he might have been 5 or 6 years old, we were standing outside, and there was this huge pile of gravel that we had brought in so that we could make a walkway and a driveway for our new house that we were living in back in 98. And my son looked up at this giant pile of rocks, and I told him, I said, first he said, Dad, that's a lot of rocks. How are we going to move all that? And I said, Son, we're just going to take our time. We're going to have fun and talk and enjoy ourselves and just take as many breaks as necessary. We're just going to pick away at this until that mountain is gone. And we did. And when my daughter and my wife saw that we were out there and asked us what we were doing, we said we're trying to make a walkway up to the house so we don't have to walk through the mud to get to the house anymore. And they came out and they picked at it with us, and we just all had fun and did the family thing. And before too long, that pile was down to next to nothing. And my son said, Dad, you were right. So all we did was just work a little bit at a time, and we finally picked that thing out. And I believe that's what we're up against right now. We're looking at a mountain right now. And we have to just keep pushing forward, because we can't lay down to evil. We can't give up. And I don't believe that our Creator put us down here to fail. I believe we were put down here to learn something really profound, and that is that, I can't do this without Barry Prince. I can't do this without Muddy or Patty or Steven or anybody else out there. I'm just one piece of that puzzle, and without the rest of them out there, basically it's hopeless. And so my job is to be that lighthouse and to keep saying what I'm saying, even if I gotta keep saying it all. Barry, I will be the last man standing in the middle of the battlefield saying, peace and love, can't we all just get along, until I go down in the dirt and until I got taking my last breath. I'm going to keep on saying the same thing until all hope is completely lost and the game is over. That's the way that I look at it, I know it's bad. And I can feel the urgency in your heart, as I can feel the urgency in everyone else's heart. We need to fix this world before it's too late. And I don't believe it's going to be too late until it's over.
Well, I hope you're right, Jesus, but you know, there's days in my life now that I honestly believe that what we see happening to the planet is—it's almost, I don't want to say it's irreversible. I don't want to ever use that word, but it's getting close to that word in my life. And you know what? If everything that we have, everything that you have, materialistic—I mean, society is such a materialistic, greed-driven society, and that's the way we've been conditioned. Was the time we were born to be like this and to think like this. And unfortunately now, we see the planet dying. I see the planet dying. Unfortunately, a large percent of this, the population isn't paying attention to this. And it's not being brought to their attention. And they're not aware of just how far and how bad our situation is becoming on this planet. What else matters to us if we lose life on the planet? If we lose the ability to, or this planet loses its ability to sustain life. And I don't want to say we're getting close to that point, but I think we're getting close to that point. And that shocks me to the core that my children will not be able to enjoy the same things that I enjoyed on this planet. Right now, the way it is, they're not even going to be able to get close to be able to enjoy what I enjoyed growing up as a child. Before we really, really started seeing the detriments to our environment through nuclear radiation, through everything else that we've done to the oceans and to the air, we're now really starting to see the effects in society. I can't visualize 10 years down the road. It's a scary thought in my brain. It really is, based on what I see going on right now. So really, I feel unless the human race can rise universally and say, hey, everything's got to change, that our main concern for everybody on this planet right now should be protecting the planet. And yet we don't see that. Unless we see that, I don't know what's going to come in the future. I do kind of know, because my Bible tells me what's coming. And what my Bible tells me is very, very accurately being portrayed right now.
Let's take a quick music break and get some coffee real quick. And we've been joined by Patty. We'll come back and we'll work through all this together. That's how I feel we're going to have to do this thing. So, folks, you're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. We're going to take a quick music break, and then we'll be right back to polish off the Knights of the Round Table. So stay tuned. Peace of mind.
And the sign said, long hair freaky people need not apply. So I tucked my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why. He said, you look like a fine, upstanding young man, I think you do. So I took off my hat, said, imagine that, ha, me working for you. Sign, sign, everywhere my sign, rocking at the scenery, breaking my mind. Do this, don't do that, can't you read the sign? The sign said, anybody caught trespassing would be shot on sight. So I jumped up the fence and I yelled at the house, hey, what gives you the right to put up a fence to keep me out, but to keep Mother Nature in? Ha! If God was here, he'd tell you to your face, man, you're some kind of sinner. Sign said, everybody welcome, come and kneel down and pray. But when they passed round the plate at the end of it all, I didn't have a penny to pay. So I got me a pen and a paper, and I made up my own little sign. I said, thank you dear Lord for thinking about me, I'm alive, oh I'm doing fine. Sign, sign, everywhere a sign, knocking at the scenery, breaking my mind.
always get a kick out of that. Oh, King Shaziz the Terrible. Hey, I rule with an iron fist. I'm ruthless. Hi, Patty. How's it going?
Hey, Shaziz. Going good. It was so good to turn on the radio this morning. My first cup of coffee. And whose voice did I hear? Barbara Threepo.
Yeah, you know, she's wonderful.
Yeah, she is awesome. And then to hear Barry, you know, that's one thing. I was talking to Barry during the break, and the one thing that I've known about Barry for all the years I've known him is his heart aches for all life. He wears it on his sleeve, and you know, I made a comment, and I said, you know, Barry, you cry often, and he says, well, everybody has to cry, you know, you have to cry. Not everybody cries, Barry. It's the truth of who you are, and that's a beautiful thing. But, you know, in the doom and gloom, which there's plenty of it out there, there really is, doesn't matter where you look, you're gonna find it. But, in that doom and gloom, there's also promise and hope. There are people that are standing up and doing the right thing. And maybe it's not about the whole world. Maybe it's not about all the people. Maybe it's about the people who still have the connection and what they do. Everything we do creates frequency. We talked about this yesterday, Shaziz. And everything that we do in a positive manner has a positive result. And so there are good things happening in the world. We don't hear about them because they don't get good copy. I mean, the news doesn't want to get on and tell you how things are going well in some areas. We can't ignore the fact that, yes, our corporate structure here is running the world, and they are psychopathic in the way they go about things. They have no value of life. And that's a horrible thing. It's hard to fathom with people like us who can see the truth of who we are and where we come from. But the one thing that is beautiful, if we look at nature, you know, and we look at the real nature, not the nature that is portrayed for us on TV, but the nature that is in our backyards, the nature that is in our forests, the nature that is in our waters, we see something miraculous happening. And that is that even nature itself is aware, and they are putting out the positive energies right now. They are making attempts to connect with us. We see this so much every day. Animals putting away their fear and approaching people, showing them the beauty of nature, showing them the acceptance of nature. I've seen so many acts of kindness from people toward nature and from nature toward people. This is magical to me. Maybe it's not about quantity. Maybe it's about quality. And like you were talking about, we cannot change the prophecies. We can change our lives. We can try to change the lives of others. And if we look at nature, we see that's being attempted. And we are part of nature. So maybe we should take our cue from nature. Maybe we should have the courage, like nature does, to approach life on a different level, not through anger, not through trying to get the word out that people, you gotta change. If people don't realize that now, they're not gonna realize it. I mean, you can't hide what's going on now. Maybe 10 years ago you could, but you can't do that today.
At some point, I realized, you know, because I got so overwhelmed with everything that was going on in the world, and it was such a mess, and I'm thinking, you know, I feel like I got the whole weight of the world on my back. I got to rush out there. I got to tell them, you know, we got to save everybody. We got to save each other. And at some point I realized that the best that I could do, because I was only one little piece of that puzzle, was to be that lighthouse that we spoke about earlier, that is, if I do what I know that I can do, and I shine my light out there, and I raise my voice to the highest levels of heaven and tell the people, you know, there's a different way that what we're doing, that those who can will follow, and those who can will lead, or whatever, you know. And I don't mind being a follower in a community. I don't mind being a servant to the community. I don't necessarily have to be, I don't want to be no leader. I want to be a partner with my brothers and sisters around the world to do what we were capable of doing all along. We can fix this world. It is an overwhelming task, you know, but like I said, in my book of faith, my Lord said that if I had the faith of a mustard seed, that I could move a mountain. And that's a big task. And so right now, I'm using my faith. Personally, I've got the faith of a mountain because I believe it's possible. And I'm trying to move mustard seeds to move other mountains and so on, you know. So I think that's what we're all doing in our own special way. And, you know, it didn't get this way overnight. And it probably ain't going to be repaired overnight. And I keep saying on the Knights of the Round Table many times, we may never see the fruits of our own labor. But if somehow or another we can put down the smooth stones that will guide our future generations towards a better way of life and, you know, a better world for everybody, it's never going to come under no one world government or one world religion, or it ain't going to come, pieces never came from the end of the barrel of a gun. It's our words and our hearts that we can spread out there, because that heart is so filled with love. And if you've ever, if you ever have the blessing of experience what me and these people that talk on these shows have experienced, the passion in their heart that would bring them to tears to try to tell them the urgency of what's going on. I've cried many a times on this show, and I'll probably do it again sometime. But I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to lay down the evil. As long as I know, because I've experienced that type of love, and I want people out there to have at least some fraction of it. I want them to be able to experience what I see when I wake up in the morning. And that's what it's all about, folks. That's what the Knights of the Round Table is about, bringing the brilliant minds from all over the world. And I'm not just talking brilliance and brains, I'm talking brilliance and love. The words that come up out of their mouth are inspiring. And those words, if heard by somebody who was in doubt about the possibility that we could do anything even remotely good for this planet, they're the ones that they need to hear that word. They need to see that light. And that's what I believe that we're doing here. So what do you guys think?
All right, Perry.
I was waiting for Patty to talk.
I knew he was.
I never ever told you I love you, Patty. I think I've told you that a few times, haven't I? But now your perspective on things, I just love listening to you talk. I really do. Sometimes I wonder if it's possible that we can save the world. And I don't know. I don't have that answer. I really don't have that answer. But I know from the bottom of my heart, if the world was to embrace overnight, or say in a 2-year period, if the whole world was to embrace the cannabis plant and take everything we're doing now and replace it with cannabis, because it can be done. Everything we're doing in our world today can be replaced with cannabis and have zero impact on our environment. Absolutely zero. Actually, a beneficial effect to our environment. Everything above it would change our world. And if the world was going to change right now, I honestly believe from the bottom of my heart, if the whole world was to embrace this and look at it and say, hey, we've had enough of your oil, we've had enough of your nuclear power, we're going to stop it all, and everything we do going forward is going to be generated through this plant or through some of the free energy technologies we know exist right now. We know that free energy is a reality in our world. and yet it isn't being brought to the public attention. The public isn't crying out loud for it. Well, my question is going to be, what is going to take for the world to cry for these alternatives that are there now, that are right in front of us, and all we have to do is grasp and run with them? But is the human race going to be able to do that?
Hey, Barry.
My question. Go ahead.
You said something a minute ago about how you don't know if we can fix this world, but do you remember, because we come from the same book of faith, do you remember what Jesus said about miracles to his disciples?
Well, of course, I'm aware of what he said to his disciples, but what are you referring to in particular?
He said that all these things that I do, you will do, and you'll do greater things. And you know, when I listen to anybody speak, and when I listen, read a book or whatever, I pay attention to every detail, and I read it and I listen to it literally. And so when Jesus was telling his disciples that these things that I do, you can do, and you will do greater things than this, told me that we have the capability to do so much amazing things. We have, if we can keep that faith, and we can exercise that spirit that we are part of, that the things that we could accomplish are unlimited. You know, when I said that, when I had that vision, the further that I got away from what some people would call the source, or other people would call God, you know, what I call the creator, or whatever, you know, the further I got away from that, the darker things become and the worse things become. And that is the same concept that has to do with the way that we interact with this world and nature and each other, that the further we get away from that love that is humanity, the darker this world becomes. And so right now is the time for every single one of the lighthouses out there that are listening, that believe in what we're talking about, that they turn that light on as bright as possible and put that energy out as hard and as heavy as they can physically muster. We got our work cut out for us. But
Darkness cannot withstand the light. It cannot. It can be as dark and as void of light, but you take one small fire, one small pinpoint of light, and it will destroy any darkness that it touches. That's the power that each of us have, and everything that we do in truth, and everything that we do in love, that has an impact. Who knows where we would be right now if there weren't people like us in the world. It's bad right now, but I know that everything that we do in love, everything that we do in truth, pushes back, and that's the point. Living in love, living in truth, is the greatest power that we have. What we have to do is bring this truth to the people so that they can feel. You know, there's a lot of people out there, Barry, that feel like you do, and they feel defeated. They feel that, what can I do? Because we've been taught for so long that there's a power in this world, and it's in authority, and it's in the governments, and it's in the war machine, but it has no power whatsoever. We are that power. We allow it to utilize our power to create itself. And what we're opposing here is a god of physical proportions. That's what this elitist psychopathic control is. It has created itself as a god, and there are so many people who have forgotten that we come from a greater place, that there is a greater power, and that it lives within us. Who knows what tomorrow will bring? we don't know that maybe in the next day, the next week, the next month, that the people will finally get it. Maybe they won't, but we don't know that. So it is our place, our promise, our hope, our destiny, so to speak, to continue on regardless of what we see, regardless of what is going on. Our path is clear. Our path is forward. Our path is in truth and in love. And if we focus on that, and if we continue to make sure that we bring this light into the darkness, how many lights are out there? Can you imagine? Can you imagine how many lights are out there globally penetrating the darkness, chasing it away? And every time when we're on the radio, and like Shaziz said, a voice hears and it speaks to their heart and they create an inner standing within themselves, then they join this light. And the light is brighter, and it grows, and it grows. As long as we don't lose hope, as long as we don't lose love and truth, we are winning. I truly believe this. We may not be able to change the awful things that government is doing, but we can change what we do for this government.
I ask my God for a miracle. And I believed that the miracle was possible. And I thought, you know, where's my miracle? You know, because my God said, you know, ask and you shall receive. And I didn't realize what I was looking at all along. My miracle showed up the day Patty showed up. My miracle showed up the day Barry showed up. My miracle showed up the day Stephen and Barbara and Muddy and Thomas and Raymond. My miracles were showing up in such great abundance. I was stepping over miracles all day long. Every time I saw my grandchildren, I was seeing miracles. Every time I took another breath, I was seeing miracles. And when I asked my God for a miracle, I got a miracle of epic proportions. And I've been trying ever since to share that with the world. You're not alone, people. When you figure out your true power, you're going to be amazed. And when you ask for a miracle, don't overlook the little ones, because they're there. They happen every single day without fail.
Well, I'm in two chats right now. I'm actually in three chats, but two with this broadcast, and one is on Shaziz listening to Stephen. And the other, I'm in the TCT chat, and I Am Nature is there, who is Brian. And he's been putting some things in here, and I'd like to read a couple of them. He says, you saw one of many creators beings. He says, the universe has many creator beings. We all can ascend to this level once we learn the lessons. You experienced this because you were ready. Your soul was ready. Way to go. And he says, folks know that there is a problem. The big problem is that people believe their governments are going to fix this problem. Governments and business are the problem. The me must become the we. Small is beautiful. Must be the norm once again. What we need to do is exactly what we're doing. There's nothing that we need to do other than what we're doing right now. And, you know, she says, you dedicated your life to the betterment of life, all life. The same thing with Barry. Barry has dedicated his life. He's given his life over to the pursuit of love and truth. You know, what greater gift can we give to the people of the world than what we're giving right now? This is something that is more powerful than anything these corporations or controllers have ever been able to do. Why do you think they're running so crazy right now? Why do you think that they're doing as much as they're doing right now to shut us up, to keep us quiet? We know who we are, and we know where we come from, and they can't touch that. And there are people out there right now who are right on the verge because they see that, they see through this corporation. They see through this control. They know that things are not right. They know that things are bad. They need the message. They need to hear that there are solutions. They need to hear that there is somewhere, someone that can stand with them. They need to know that they have the power. These are the gifts that you guys are bringing, that we're all bringing. We need to celebrate that we are here in this time to be able to reach out to these people, because if it wasn't for us, guys, think about it. Yep. What would be the result?
My life changed and I was humbled the day that I realized that I truly wanted to be a servant to my brothers and sisters around the world. It's not a bad thing to be a servant or a caretaker. It's a good thing because you get to nurture that seed of love and that heart. You can watch those hearts grow bigger. Every time somebody comes to my house, I got to give them a hug when they get here and one before they leave, because I want them to know the last thing that they remember was nothing but goodness from this piece of land that I'm blessed to be standing on. And it's a little bit of work, you know. I'm getting older. I'm not getting any younger. None of us are. And it's a little bit of a chore to try to maintain this, but I've noticed that the more love I pour into this land, the more this land pours back to me, and the more miracles I ask my God, the more it just, when you figure out what this world is all about, you know, everybody's born and they always want to know, where did we come from? How did we get here? What's the reason for it all? When you find out the true meaning of life, it's a humbling experience. And it's not a bad thing to the extent where you have to be a slave to humanity the rest of your life. It's not about that. It's about that feeling that you get when you do something that you know is right. It's that feeling that you get when you stand in the midst of true love, not the distorted version of the world. I'm talking about that sacrificial love, that you're willing to give up everything because you know that the best prize, it ain't shiny like gold or silver. It's not a diamond. It's not something that you can covet that you know, has a value, anything other than an amazing feeling that you're going to get from your heart when you share with others things, the miracles that you've received. I've seen things in my life, folks, that no man or woman should ever have to witness. Terrible things. And I've also seen the good part of life. I've seen things that, miracles that otherwise would have been ignored. As I put this network together, and somehow or another, other networks came together with us, and they had the same dream. And I was like, you know, I thought I was alone in this mission, and now there's so many people around that feel the same way, that feel the same urgency, that want to resolve the issues of the world, that show them, look, we got the answers right in front of us. We have every single answer to every single question, every single problem that exists on this planet. Now the motivation comes in. Now we got to motivate the world. We got to be the lighthouse that shines, that gives people the inspiration and the words coming out of our mouth. Some folks had told me at one point in time, all we ever do is talk. Well, folks, if you ever discount the power of the spoken word, then you're going to miss out on something amazing. With your voice, and even the tone of your voice, you can raise somebody up to the highest levels of heaven. You can give them hope. And if it ain't no hope in this world, then we all might as well just lay down and just let the world do what the world does and give up.
Well, none of us are going to lay down, Shaziz, that's for sure. I won't stop talking until the day I die. And with that being said, my friend, I do have to step out because I'm doing a commercial flooring job for a dentist this weekend, and we've got his office torn apart, and I've got two young gentlemen coming to join me to help me, and I have to step out of here. It's always a pleasure joining you, my friend.
Well, Barry,
I'll make sure I get in next week again.
you enjoy your life and keep being that doggone lighthouse that is shining out there around the people around you, because your circle's going to continue to keep widening. The more loving light you shine out there, the bigger your circle gets, and eventually your circle and our circles will all meet together, and this world will be a better place. We may not see the fruits of our labor, but we may. You see what I'm saying?
Amen. I hear you. Okay, brother, I do have to step out. Jesus, thanks for having me in, and it's been a pleasure as always. We'll talk to you soon.
So, Patty, you think that this world is so out of whack that we don't have no hope yet? I think Patty disappeared there. All right, well, maybe she muted her mic. She might be talking and can't. Folks, you're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. It was a concept that came about a long time ago when I started listening in on the world and going down the rabbit hole of all the conspiracies that exist and all the secret societies and terrible atrocities that are occurring throughout the land. When I read my book of faith and Revelations told me about wars and rumors of wars and plagues and famine and pestilence and all the terrible things that we have to contend with on a daily basis in this, what should otherwise be a peaceful planet. And so, at some point in time, I believed that it was possible to throw a pebble in the pond and spread a dream. And that dream was to somehow or another make this world a better place. A little bit at a time, you saw a piece of trash on the ground, you'd pick it up and you'd put it in its proper place. And then I would do the same, and together, before it was all said and done, we could step back and we could look at the miracle that was just, that just come about. You know, a lot of old houses out there in this world are all deteriorated and they're all falling down, and they had stories to be told. And in every single one of these houses, people had come together and they'd lived lives and trials and tribulations. And once they were gone, that life that house deteriorated into basically back into nature. It was falling down. So nature always takes back what you're not going to use. Society, the way that we've been told, you know, it has rules, it has regulations, it has fences and signs, and but society, the way it was meant to be, was there was no need for borders. There was no need for wars and plagues and famines and pestilence. Mary's right. There is an evil that crosses this land on a daily basis that is working 24 hours a day to try to put us down. Sicknesses and trials and tribulations that we have to contend with on a daily basis can bring us to the point where we don't have hope anymore. And the moment we lose all hope, the moment we lose all faith in our divine spirit or creator or whatever side of the fence, I don't want to argue what you believe. All I want to do is be the best that I can be in my life to shine that light so that hopefully you don't stub your toe in the darkness. I understand why we're here. I finally get it. I finally get the meaning of life. And I'm trying to do my best and hope that other people out there will get to experience what it is that I'm saying. And if the only tool that I've got is the words coming out of my mouth, I want to pick my words wisely. I want you to know that there's love coming from my heart, and they're embedded in those words. And if you pick up on these podcasts some years after I'm gone, and it inspires you to keep that ball rolling, and inspires you to go out there and do something good for somebody else, and to work in harmony with the world that you've been blessed with, then my job here is complete. I'm glad to have the honor to be a servant to my brothers and sisters. Because I
get. And you are. You most certainly are, she says. You know, you're one of the people that makes me know that there is reason for hope because of your heart and your dedication. And, you know, there's everybody has their niche, right? I have the thing about community and building communities outside of a monetary system. I have all these ideas. You have the ability to create systems of energy that can replace the antiquated systems that we have now. All of us have a little bit of a parcel of the puzzle, right?
Yep.
And when we come together, it's like having your own round table, knights of the round table, like in King Arthur's time. You know, we come together only for one thing, and that's for truth and love and making a better world. And we all have that piece of the puzzle that's important and that is needed. That's the magical part about us coming together. Shaziz, how many people in the freaking world and this internet, massive as it is, yet here we found each other, right?
Yep.
To me, that's amazing. That's magical. Of 8 billion people in the world, here we are, and we each have a piece of the puzzle, and we're all together. You know, I see magic in everything. I see magic every morning when I get up and I walk outside and I hear birds and I see the trees and I see little small insects even. To me, they're magical. I see the magic of it. And I see the magic in you. We have to start wanting to see the magic in people. People have to start wanting to see the magic in life. You know, we have to show them. And I think that's what we're doing.
Well, I'm going to post in the chat room a photo that says it all. And this picture I found out there somewhere on the internet. And it spoke to me, and it says the whole story. The pieces of the puzzle that we keep talking about, you know, if we really sit down and think about what we're saying, if you got a 500-piece puzzle and somehow or another one of them gets lost, you will never complete that picture. You'll never see the whole entirety of what it was meant to be. And that's why we got to gather the people just like us. 9 billion people on the planet, and here we are, Patty. Muddy joined us in there. But folks, if you're in the chat room, click on that picture. And just take a moment to ponder the meaning of that picture. It says it all. And it even says that it says it all. It says this picture says it all. You are the missing piece of the puzzle. You got one person standing outside that circle, and that puzzle can never be finished because you're not there. And that's why I say it's so important that we protect our family that around the world, that, you know, if we lose one life, how can the picture ever be complete? If we lose many lives, you got a bigger hole in the center of that picture. And that's the lesson that needed to be learned by humanity before we end up like past societies, before, you know, worlds collapsed or whatever. You know, this could very well be the very last go for humanity. You know, if the experiment fails every single time you try it, then, you know, at what point do you finally give up? But this time around, I see something different. I see something where there is a movement out there of people waking up to what it's all about, and they're starting to do things. They're starting to talk to each other. Neighbors are coming out of their house and first inviting them, or in what's the word I'm looking for, where you meet somebody for the first time. You know, introducing themselves to their neighbor that they should have known 10 years ago. Now they're working together. They're helping each other out. That's the way this world should work. You know, in Switzerland, they make some really nice watches. Beautiful watches. Handcrafted. With one gear missing out of that watch becomes useless. It ain't gonna tell time right. It doesn't have all the pieces of the puzzle. So if you have an opportunity to share this picture right here, or any of them for that matter that you find on the Knights of the Round Table, one of my favorite ones is the little squirrel that's in the little suit of armor. He's got a little shining suit of armor and his little sword, and it says underneath there, even the smallest knight can make a difference. And so when I listen to people and they sound hopeless and the urgency is so strong because they see all the things going on in the world, and I want them to know that my friend Barry, he's making a difference in the world.
Got a question.
Yeah.
What's the most perfect magical moment of your life?
The most perfect? It was the day that I realized that I wanted to be a servant to the world, to my fellow brothers and sisters. Because before that, I overlooked the simple miracles. You know, I overlooked that every time you look in the smiling baby's face and the love, the unconditional love that you will see from a child that's just born into this world that, you know, needs us to take care of them. I overlooked the miracles of the bees and the birds and the animals flying around. I mean, my life was just running so fast that, you know, I was just running right by. You know, I asked for a miracle. I didn't think I got a miracle. And then I realized that I was looking at a miracle all along. Everything around me was a miracle. The fact that I woke up in the morning and had breath in my lungs was a miracle. When I realized that. When I realized that, that was the best moment of my life.
What about you, Patty?
Well, you know, I have many. I can't pinpoint it to one. Profound moments like standing on a mountain in Loveland, Colorado. I think it was up about 5,000 feet, maybe a little lower. And I was watching people. They were having a snowball fight. There was a light dusting of snow. We weren't high enough to have heavy snow. And I was standing in a treed area what is it that grows in the white trees with the paper light aspens. Okay, there you go. And I was upset because these trees were completely scarred up with people putting their initials in them and dates and I was here and at the time I was in a point of I was looking at these trees and I was saying, how can they do this, you know, these poor trees? And it started to rain and I was standing there in the rain and lightning struck. And the mountain underneath my feet shook. And I shook. And I stood there and the power and the magic of the air and the earth connecting and it being so powerful, showed me, I mean, it shook me to the core. And I gave thanks, and I was grateful, and everything was beautiful. I noticed that light, no matter what, will always, always hold that power. And that was a magical moment. I worked in Oklahoma on a ranch, a cattle ranch, and there was a lightning storm, and three of the cows were struck by lightning, and they had died. Yeah, so we had to take and bury them. So I went with the foreman of the ranch because I was a newbie, so he was going to break me in. And we went to these cows, and it was my job to take this big chain and hook it around them so that he can pull them with the tractor to the grave. So they were under this tree, and I went there And I stood and I said a prayer to help them on their way. And I bent down to hook the chain up around the first one. And all of a sudden I heard other cows, and I looked up and the whole herd had come there and stood around that tree. So many so that I couldn't even get out. There was about maybe, I was up against a tree, and the cows were like, maybe 10 foot away, and the three cows laid in between. And I watched, and my foreman watched from his tractor as every one of those cows went to each and every cow that had passed and touched them and lowed to them. And the cows that were waiting in the procession were talking to each other in low moans. And you could feel that they were mourning these three who had passed. And I stood there and was witness to a funeral, a passing of three wow. loved beings other than a human. And the expression and the emotion, it just reinforces the love that I have for nature and the understanding and understanding that there is no difference between us. We like to make it look like, well, they're not really like us. They don't feel, they don't think like us. So it's okay to kill them. You know, it's okay to indiscriminately take life as long as it's not a two-legged. But if you take a two-legged, then that means something. But all life has meaning, and all life understands loss and love and fear. You know, these are real emotions in every living thing. And that was a profound moment. And there are many more, but we won't go into it because that would take the whole show. But, you know, just say
that would be a beautiful show, wouldn't it?
We're getting down to the wire there, but when I was listening to you talk about the tree, you know, when I said about being a caretaker, I actually doctored a tree, you know, in my own redneck way, I guess. I saw one of my fruit trees that had a broken branch on there, and I've done this before, and it works. I took some electrical tape out of my pocket, and I bandaged up the branch, and allowed it to, you know, heal itself. And I talked to that tree, as crazy as it sounds, I talked to that tree, and, you know, you're gonna be all right, you know. And after a while, when you start to see the bark of the tree start to, you know, it's kind of like if you squeeze your arm, you'll see a little indentation. When you start to see that tape is too tight on there, you take that tape off, and that branch is healed. But that is just one little tiny example of what you can do, you know, to work in harmony with nature. You know, you help nature out. Now, I got a fruit tree that gives me fruit. You know, it feeds me. I took care of it, and it's feeding me. Folks, that's what I'm trying to say. You're not beyond hope. As wild as the world appears and the things that we have to deal with, it's not hopeless yet. As far as I'm concerned, like I said, I'll be the last man on the battlefield saying, oh, peace and love, can't we all just get along, you know? Until somebody takes that life out of me, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. It's working for
Perfect
me.
Moment. Perfect moments. When I was married, when my mom ran her fingers through my hair when I was sick, and I'd wake up and I'd see her, and she'd just looking at me in that complete look of adoration, just a light hum. Oh, another perfect moment. And go right back to sleep, just running fingers through my hair. It was a beautiful moment, but one in particular, was basically spending a week at a powwow and everything on the reservation and sleeping overnight and stuff. When you first wake up in the morning and you hear the clearing pipes playing and the sound of, it was several pipes, and they were all being echoed by the trees at different distances all at once. And with my eyes closed, I could pick out pretty much where every tree was, like just a map in the mind. And it was just so full, and you feel the warmth inside, not just, you know, like in your chest. I'm saying all over from head to foot. It's a very energetic, calm, loving way to wake up, and it reminded me much of my mom running her fingers through my hair. But that was every morning, and I look forward to it. You'd wake up, don't move a muscle, just listen, close your eyes.
You know, that's amazing, Muddy. Sometimes when people tell a story, I'm thinking of experiences in my life. And, you know, out camping when you got the whole family reunion going and everybody's got their tents, that feeling that you get when you wake up and you see hear some people talking and laughing and enjoying life. It's the simple things in life. Those are the best times in the world. And not overlooking the miracles that we've been given every day when the sun comes up. It's, in my mind, it's a miracle.
Yes, it is.
Well, Patty, we're down to it, man. it's a shame to see a show like this. Huh?
Yeah, I actually got a whole hour in today.
Yeah. It's a shame to see this time of the Knights of the Round Table come together, because there's so much wonderful discussion these days. I mean, it seems like every single one of these shows just keeps getting better and better. You know, when people really pour their heart out into the world and share those things with everybody, it just keeps...
Well, there's not enough of that, you know? There isn't enough of that. That's what we need to do. But we need to come from a place of respect and honor and sacredness. We have to look and see where we come from, and, you know, understand the fact that I don't care who you call or what you call the entity, the creator, God, Jehovah. It doesn't matter what you call them. That significant creator of life. We are part of that. We were given this gift, a gift that is immeasurable. You cannot ever experience the full extent of life in one lifetime. One individual cannot possibly experience everything that this life has to offer. How great is that? And we are part of it, and we the people are free to experience that as soon as we decide it's time, in our own way, in our own terms, and in respect and gratefulness. My gosh, the greatest miracle is you. The greatest miracle is me, is Stephen, is Muddy. I mean, we look at miracles every day and we fail to recognize it. The ant is a miracle. Think about it.
It's
think
amazing.
About, yeah, how awesome it is to be a part of this. Thank you.
It's
you make this easy.
It's I just want people to experience what's in your heart and what's in everybody else's heart. I want people to just feel it one time. Just one time. If you just feel it one time what we're talking about, then you're going to understand why it is that we're so persistent in doing and saying what we do, because we believe in the dream. We know it's possible. We've been given such an amazing gift that if you can recognize that gift and when you're stepping over all of those miracles that you keep missing out on and you're not paying attention, you're missing out on something so wonderful. This world's, like we said, you've heard the passion in a lot of people's hearts and words that we got a lot of problems that need to be resolved. But in my book of faith, like I said, it said if I had the faith of a mustard seed, I could move mountains, and I see that mountain moving. And that's what we need. We need to keep shining those lights and being that lighthouse on those stormy seas for the rest of the people out there in the world that just haven't either woken up or what, however you want to say it. I don't want to try to sound like I'm saying lesser of anybody else out there, because they're not. They just haven't come to that understanding yet that we do have more power than we can possibly imagine. In Genesis, in my book of faith, it says that man was created in the image of our Creator, which makes us creators. We create our own pain, we create our own suffering, we create our own destinies. We create our own wars and plagues and famines and pestilence, and it's not a divine entity that allows us to allow people to suffer. It's us as a whole. You know, some of us figured it out a little sooner than others, but I see that word is spreading out there. Those positive pebbles. Patty's throwing a fistful of positive pebbles. Buddy's throwing a fistful of them. I'm throwing a fistful of them, and everybody else that we've talked to. We've got a tsunami of love crossing this land of biblical proportions or epic proportions, whichever terminology you feel comfortable with. There is a tsunami of love spreading across this planet. And nature's starting to recognize that there are those of us that are willing to do the work necessary to help it out. So with that said, you guys got any last words of wisdom? Patty?
I think Muddy was going to add something.
Muddy? Muddy. He's a unique character.
Hello.
You got any last words of wisdom before we end the Knights of the Round Table today?
Yeah, my internet went out. Did I give that perfect moment out there?
Yeah, you disappeared and then you came back with a bunch of noise and then now you're back.
Oh, okay. But you did hear my...
Yes.
My perfect moment.
About your when you were sick with your mother. Is that the one? We didn't hear the other.
No, and then after, okay, that's when I lost out. And the last one basically was spending a week at a powwow with a friend of mine. I went to many powwows, but...
Oh, yes.
We got that one, too. That was a good one.
With the pipes.
And I came back with the family reunion in the tents. It was wonderful. All right, well, Patty, you got any last words of wisdom?
Well, it's just, you know... If you're listening, then you're already where we're at. Just pass that around. Don't be afraid to show people the light, no matter what. No matter what you consider that being. Smiling, opening doors, reaching out, just being living, loving, and laughing, you know, and stand strong. There you go.
Well, folks, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. I want to thank everybody, Barbara Three Crow and Muddy and Patty and all the people in the chat room and Haggy Shack and TCT Radio. Go over there and visit with those folks. They're really nice people. I want you to be able to experience what it's like to hang out with true friends and decent people that, you know, just want to share nothing but love and information. And so... if you like anything that you've heard in this show, I don't care if you chop the podcast up and pick just the best of whatever you like in there and share it around. If there's anything in this that touches your heart that you think would help somebody else, repodcast it, share it with a friend, show them that there are lighthouses all over this world, that the lights are coming on, and be that lighthouse yourself and turn your light on as bright as you can possibly muster. One thing good about...
One comment. Stop buttering me up and sprinkling me with gold leaf and everything. It's hard enough to get through the door with this big head of mine.
Anyway, yeah, you're right, Muddy. I have problems too sometimes when you guys talk to me. My heart spans and my chest was too big to go through the door. I just feel so good. But, folks, that's one thing about the power of love. You know, you got a bank account where you can put all the gold and silver you want in, and when you decide to go out and spend that, eventually that bank account runs dry, but that heart never does. You can just pour out that love as much as you possibly can, and it just never seems to run out. And you got to ask yourself one day, where did that love come from? When you finally experience that, you're going to see the world in a different way, and that's why we do what we do on the Knights of the Round Table. So with that said, peace and love, everybody. Share this podcast with somebody you care about. Take care.
Woman, man. Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people, I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're Knights of the Round Table. We dance whenever we're able. We do routine to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're Knights of the Round Table. Our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rise that our quiet unseen able. We're off the mad in Camelot. We sing from the die of Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Terrible, and the Knights of the Round Table.